Hello and welcome back to the Double Take Podcast with Jess and Jenny, where we give our takes on all things TV. Today is a check-in episode with a heavy emphasis on Shogun episode 4 at the end. We'll be doing a little bit of what we've been watching in the last week, but then if you haven't seen episode 4, The Eightfold Fence of Shogun, you can turn it off and wait until you've watched it and then join us later. But before then, what have you been watching that's interesting, Jess? I feel like I have far fewer TV shows right now.
Yeah, I watched all of Apples Never Fall.
All of it. Okay.
There's 7 episodes. That actually, yeah, I guess that is a lot.
I just remember
it does suck you in.
I was going to say, last week you were like, maybe I'll watch a few episodes. Like, maybe I'll start it. But does that mean that it sucked you in enough to keep going?
It totally did. It's funny because I wouldn't say, like, I loved it. I wouldn't even say I really liked it. But something about it, I mean, obviously it's a mystery. It's based on a book by Leanne Moriarty who wrote Big Little Lies. And that is one of my favorite books. That feels so silly to say now. It's like saying Harry Potter is one of your favorite books. Like, it's such a popular book that it's like
– it was formative to say that, I guess.
Yeah. But I read – it was like one of the first thrillers I read.
Yeah.
Or like mystery books I read back when I first started like reading again, when college was like – I was like ending. It was like my last semester and I started to read and do audiobooks. And it like – was mind-blowing, that book. And then the adaptation, obviously, really good. So I was like, okay, this will be good. It's Leanne Moriarty again. However, I had not read the book that it's based on. Mm. Have you read it?
No.
I had put it on my list when it came out because I liked Big Little Lies, but then the reviews were mixed and I just kind of put it off forever. And then when this show was coming out, I feel like everybody's response who has read the book was like, oh, but the book was really boring. I was like, okay, so I will not be reading that. And I was a little bit worried about the show. And that's why I didn't feel super excited. I definitely knew I was still going to watch it because I like I'll always watch the mystery dramas, just all of them. But some of them, when they're boring, it's like they're so tedious in a way that like is specific to this genre where it's like it's just always giving you like a sort of cliffhanger and you're like, okay, yeah, but just get to the point. This one I thought though did a better job with characters than a lot of the like mediocre boring ones that I am thinking about when I say that. And so I just really liked the performances. Annette Bening, Sam Neill, Jake Lacy, Alison Brie, they're all so good that I just was like, I could just watch this. Like, it's the vibes were good. It was like Miami, or are they in? They're in Palm Beach, I think. It was like Palm Beach during like a hurricane, so it was like dark and like kind of spooky, but like still centered around this family and their drama. And they each have like their own little quirky personality.
Okay,
I don't know. So it just really sucked me in. I wouldn't say it was great. I wouldn't say the like mystery paid off super well in the end, but I liked it for what it was. And it was like, it's sometimes nice to just get sucked into something.
I was going to say, I think there's a case to be made for that kind of TV. Like, I think that's a type of TV that has been a little bit lacking, or not has been lacking, but has been a little bit non-existent for the last few years, of something that is like not prestige television or otherwise great, but it is still fun TV. So good. I'm glad that exists. And maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah, I don't know that you would like it necessarily.
Maybe I won't check it out then.
The thing that's kind of funny is that I do feel like it was trying to be prestige TV, and that I think it was trying to be the next Big Little Lies. Like, they were really leaning in to the like, oh, from the same author as, which makes sense. I mean, that's the way to market it. Like, sure, they're right. But then with the cast and with this huge marketing push, like I've seen, I don't know if it's just like really targeting me, but I've seen the ads everywhere, which I never see ads for Peacock shows.
I haven't, to be honest. Shows. Yeah, I haven't.
So maybe it is targeting me. But I feel like I've seen the ads everywhere. Like, the cast is obviously expensive. It makes me feel like they were maybe banking on it more than it is going to pay off. It has really bad reviews, though. I mean, and whatever, Rotten Tomatoes, like, you know, audience reviews are like, who is leaving a review on Rotten Tomatoes? So I don't know how much to like believe those. But then the critic reviews are low, but I get that because it's like mediocre mysteries where like the mystery doesn't really pay off are like often not reviewed super well. But I am a little surprised because I felt like everything else was done well. Like, there's not a performance to criticize in this whole show. And the vibes and the aesthetics and the, like, everything else is, I thought, well done. So I was a little surprised that it's as low as it is. But I do think they, like, I think they thought they had the next Big Little Lies on their hand. I don't think this is going to win any awards. So that's
– got it.
It's probably not as, like, middle of the road binge drama. Or it is, but that's not what they thought they were making, I guess.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
count – to respond to your point. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like if people out there are listening and they like mysteries, I thought it was fine. My expectations were a little low, so maybe that was also the key.
Yeah. Okay. So go – would you say – is this a good summation? Go into it for the vibes of general mystery, like dark show with good performances, but don't expect to be, you know, awed by the actual writing or the story itself.
It's not even as cringy as, like, you know, like, you know, like a Harlan Coben show. Like I've said, like, those are just – the dialogue is bad. The just – everything's bad. It just – it was really – its only intention is to, like, keep you pressing the next button. And so they put these, like, crazy cliffhangers and crazy twists. Yeah. Like, it's not that. I thought the dialogue was decent. The performances were all good. There were no, like, cringy moments. I wasn't, like, rolling my eyes at all.
Sure.
It's just a little slow in terms of, like, the character development is there. It's not, like, super strong, but it was strong enough. There's not a lot of twists throughout, which is, like, fine because, you know, you don't want it to turn into, like, a Harlan Coben. There's a million twists for a minute. But at the same time, then you get to the ending and you're like, oh, all of that. All of that for that. Like, I don't love the ending. And I thought it was, like, a little anticlimactic. So I could see people getting really mad about that. You know, when the ending of a mystery kind of sucks, it sort of takes away from the whole thing.
Yeah, no payoff is never fun. All right. Interesting.
I'll put my thoughts more in order when I write the review for it this week. I don't know yet what I would rate it, somewhere in the middle of the rating scale.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I should just keep asking you what you've been watching, because the stuff that I've been watching has been keeping up with the ongoing weekly release shows, like Abbott Elementary, Shogun, obviously, like we're going to talk about, partially because it was Carter's birthday this weekend. So I didn't spend a ton of time in front of the TV. So I've got a lot of catching up to do today through Wednesday. But anything else that should be on my radar, or anyone else that's listening?
Should be. Well, no. I guess I watched great. The other thing I was going to mention, but it's, like, particularly not good. I also think it's on your list to watch, so maybe I won't tell you too much about it. However, I will just say that it wasn't good, and it's called Girls on the Bus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was slated to watch that.
Yeah. It's funny. I texted you, like, the first thing that happened. Like, literally the very first scene they open with it. I think it was either Lucy Dacus or...
You said Lucy Dacus,
Baby
yeah.
Bridgers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can confirm.
So I was like, oh, this could be good. Like, cool soundtrack, decent start. Like, literally after, like, I'm saying 10 seconds. And then Matt and I were watching it because I was like, oh, there's a new show. Like, maybe it's a little bit like The West Wing. I'm not really sure what to expect yet. And then we made it halfway through and he goes, does this suck? And I was like, yeah, I think so. And he was like, can we please turn it off?
God.
So I had to watch the second half by myself, and yeah, can confirm it's pretty terrible.
Maybe now that I'm going in with those expectations, I'll find some hidden gem in it. But who knows? Okay,
good. Maybe. Good, yeah, good. Going in with The West Wing as, like, a comp was really wrong.
Yeah, dang.
Like, really, really wrong. The way that The West Wing makes you feel, like, weirdly patriotic and, like, happy to be watching a show about politics, even when you're not that into politics, or yeah. like. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, sign me up for the top of the patriotism list.
No, but
then
feel...
I watch an episode of The West Wing and I'm like, oh, my heart's swelling over politics. This is weird.
You're like, oh, I can make a difference.
This is the opposite. Yeah. This is, like, if you thought you were going to be annoyed by a show about politics, like, this confirms it is it's as grating and annoying as you could possibly feel.
And not in politics. A Veep way. We've mentioned Veep every episode in the last couple of weeks, and I just want to keep that going.
Yeah, I want to rewatch Veep. No, there's no satire. There's, like, barely any comedy. The comedy that is in there is very, like, ABC Family 2007.
Got
it's
it.
Not good. It's I'm maybe like the CW is a better
new
example?
Genre of politics. Like, I'm like, is it House of Cards? Is it West Wing? Is it Veep? Is it, I don't know, Scandal?
No, because you've just named good shows.
Right, but those are different genres, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, genre-wise, it's closest to, I guess it has to be closest to the West Wing, and that it's just a character-driven drama following a campaign. There's no real comedy. You know, there's like lightness to the dialogue in some parts, but it's not a comedy. It's not a satire. It's not a thriller.
I'm
like going through the list as I go. I'm like, Veep is satire. House of Cards is thriller. It's not any of those. However, the drama aspect of it is very like CW or ABC Family drama. Freeform. I got to call it Freeform now. But it's giving ABC Family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just not very good. And
I'm not
the
stoked.
Main character is. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to not tell you that it was horrible because you have to watch it. But I needed to warn the listeners.
That's okay. I appreciate it. And like I said, different expectations. Maybe I'll find something to like about it.
You might. Also, Carla Gugino's in it, and I love her.
Great.
But I don't know. I don't understand why she's in this. Why did she sign up for this? Money, I guess. Anytime somebody's in something where it's really bad, I'm like, it's got to just be the money. Because there's no way she read the script. Everyone's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, I would love to know. I know that obviously for like marketing purposes, and I'm sure there are some actors and actresses that have like a gag notices or whatever. I would love more people to be more upfront after a thing has happened and say like why they joined a thing or what, just like I want to know everything about the making of a production. I'm thinking specifically of Madame Web also. Like I want to know what all of the actors are thinking right now. I want to know what they thought when they signed on. I want to know how trapped they felt, like how far into the production were they like, oh no.
I feel like Dakota Johnson has like done her best to convey that without like obviously they're not allowed to say that. Like the publicists or the whatever contracts they're in, like while the movie is in theaters or recent and it's trying to make money, like they would get in trouble. Like you can't badmouth the movie you're in, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think she has done her best. Also Sydney Sweeney and like her little quip in the SNL monologue. Like clearly they're not dumb. Like they know it's bad.
Right.
But I do think it's the kind of thing where in like 5 years we'll get like a cool Dakota Johnson interview where she's like, oh yeah, it was terrible and I hated it.
Yeah. Maybe I need to make time in my life to read more of those like exposés or not exposés. You know what I mean? Like more articles about actors many years removed from projects that were sort of not as good as they expected. But anyway, so like
I feel like
Carla,
every time
someday.
That happens, it becomes like a big fit, like a
several page spread in a magazine.
Well, it's like it'll be like part of an interview, but then it'll be all the headlines are like Robert Pattinson hated Twilight. Like that's what they'll pull from an interview. Which didn't he? That is the thing that happened, right? Didn't he say that?
I don't know that most of them didn't love being in it, but I think Robert Pattinson being the star, it was more shocking to be like he hated every second. He wanted to pull out.
He really disparaged it later. I think what was the recent one? Jacob Elordi in The Kissing Booth.
Oh,
and
I
then I
that.
Think Joey King was like, he shouldn't like criticize something that we were in. I don't know. I think there was a little bit of drama there.
Oh, I
that's
go
who
that
up. Was, right? Jacob Elordi.
Yeah, they were dating at the time, so maybe there's also a
what?
She's like, how? Yeah, Jacob Elordi and Joey King.
No way.
Yeah.
Stop.
Nope.
I didn't know this.
The height differential. Whoa. She's much shorter, and he, as you know, very tall.
Jacob Elordi also dated Zendaya. Did you know this?
I did know this. And I say I know this. I had heard that. I didn't know how much of that was rumor and how much of that was confirmed. But I do know that he dated Joey King because I learned that back when I think they were still dating or just freshly broken up. And I went back like any good Instagram stalker and went through all of the pictures to like find clues. And that was when he was still all over Joey King's Instagram page. That is no longer the case. Same with Jacob Elordi. Like he's since wiped his... Like ever since he's gotten bigger and bigger projects, I feel like he's started his Instagram over. Anyway, I remember a few years ago, way back when they had pictures of them kissing and like holding hands and walking down a beach. It's true.
Oh my God. They had to be in the second and third movies after they broke up.
Yeah.
Wait, he was in all three movies? Why do I feel like he went from like...
Wait, there was
three I thought he
movies?
Went from like... Yeah, there were three kissing movies. I thought he went from like obscurity to like superstardom. I didn't know, like in my mind, he never went through this awkward, like mediocre movie phase. Even though I knew like he was in The Kissing Booth, but even though I said that, I was like, was that him? Like in my mind, he didn't do this.
It feels like he must have been in Kissing Booth 2 and 3 while also in Euphoria, right? Like those must have overlapped, or is my timeline totally off?
Yeah, no, you're correct.
So maybe
that is just such a weird vibe to be in both of those things. Like at
he
the
must
same
have been
time.
Contractually obligated to do like a set, however long they were, you know. Oh,
that was like his first thing, The Kissing Booth.
Yeah.
Like at all though, I thought, oh well, maybe he was in other stuff that I just like didn't see. But
no, I think he got
famous
plays.
Because of The Kissing Booth. This is so shocking to me.
I can't believe you did not know this.
I like knew it, but like I didn't know it. You know what I mean? Like in my mind, Jacob Elordi is just like the guy from Saltburn, and he was everywhere over the last like 6 months. And so to like reconcile that with like, oh yeah, that was the guy who was in Kissing Booth with Joey King is like something I knew, but had never really thought
internalized.
About.
Yeah. Joey King has also gotten like removed herself from that type of movie pretty quickly. No one else in that movie, I think, has, but
yeah. But yeah. True.
Anyway.
I tried to watch like 5 minutes of it and it was scary.
The Kissing Booth?
I did not continue. Yeah.
I watched it all when it first came out and I don't now remember when that was. And I remember thinking like, this is not a good movie, but it is cute for a rom-com, I guess. Like this generation's youth will
enjoy.
I
just don't like Joey King. It came out like 2017.
I know. You've mentioned this before. I don't really understand it, but.
I don't understand how you don't understand it. It's just like everything about her.
That feels like such a mean girl thing to say.
I know it does. I feel mean when I say it. I just don't know. I don't know. Sometimes you just don't like somebody.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if it someday comes out that she's like a secret serial killer, you'll be like, see, I knew it.
I don't get serial killer vibes from her. I just get like, I don't know. She was.
How do you feel about Millie Bobby Brown? And is it the same way?
It's similar. There must be something about the like child actor thing. But like there are other child actors that have grown up that I've liked. I think for her specifically, it's that she played these horribly annoying characters in like Disney Channel shows that I really liked when I was a kid. Oh, she totally did. You don't
Which
know this?
One?
No, I'm going to look it up. But I think she was in like either That's So Raven or Suite Life. This like, when she was like young. And her face is memorable. So in my mind, like that was what I saw. I saw like the little bratty kid from, I don't know if it was Suite Life or what it was, but... And
yeah,
I don't think I've ever grown out of okay, this is embarrassing. She was in two episodes of The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. It's like the first thing she did in her career. She was a child. She was a very annoying character. It's always shocking to me when I remember someone so distinctly from like Sweet Life or Hannah Montana, and then I look it up and they were in like one
a
episode.
Brief guest
and, like,
star.
Why did this cement itself in my brain so strongly? But yeah, that's the story of Joey King. I'm sorry.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. We went on a huge tangent from Girls on the Bus.
Yes,
but I like
did.
It. I like it. I would be totally down to transition into Shogun.
Sure.
The episode, also, I should mention just in case, because I can't edit out every single thing. There is a house across the street that is being constructed upon. And so every once in a while, there's a rogue hammer. And if I can't edit them out, I'm sorry, listeners. That's what that is.
I don't hear it.
Great. Episode 4 called The Eightfold Fence. I haven't put much thought into what that meant. And I'm now still drawing a blank as to what the Eightfold. Oh, is that what she taught? What Mariko
yeah,
talks
it's
about?
The thing where you learn
Got
as a
it.
Child to like control your or like to go away inside yourself or whatever. Yeah. Bury your feelings. The way they used that in the trailer, I did feel a little duped. I don't know how many times you watch the trailer. I feel like I've seen it a million times. But she says like, do not be fooled by our politeness. It's a pretty like cutting line in the trailer. I'm like, oh shh, because like they're about
stuff's
to like
gonna go down
fight. Yeah. but in this scene it's like, don't be fooled by our politeness. And I think she's about to say something like hardcore, but then she's just like, we go inside ourselves. And so that to me didn't match what I thought was gonna happen. But
I see.
I'm assuming it comes back later in some way. Like this was – it had the vibe of like a prophecy, this whole
conversation. Yeah, especially we got the little flashback of her of her background that it seems like it's going to unfold kind of slowly over the next few episodes. We got a little teaser trailer of her traumatic past. So I think the eightfold fence of her, like what she is hiding, will come out.
I suppose we should have said out loud that we will be saying spoilers, but we kind of already did. So, but more spoilers ahead.
Yeah, we were basically like, characters get developed. I think we're safe for now. But yeah, spoilers from here on out.
Spoilers going forward, because I was about to say, well, I guess I could continue the Mariko topic. I really like when a show puts in a little flashback like that. I was like, ooh, intrigue. I must know what happened. And I think that that helps in a show like this, because I can get a little bit bored with like war dramas. Mm. There's only so much like, oh, which side will win the battle that like really engages me. I like better, or I'm more interested by like the character dynamics and their backstories and like the romances and
totally.
Maybe this just is typical of me and what I like. But so I was intrigued by that. And then I really, really liked that they got together in a way that felt like not cheap. Like they actually like had these conversations and they started to build their little romance. And I was like, ooh, I like them together now.
The scene where they, first of all, the classic romance trope of her accidentally walking on in on him while he's bathing. Like,
classic.
Very classic. And then the cute, like, what would you do if we were in London together? Like, and he like outlines this whole hypothetical date. Very cute. Very sweet. And like a good lead in to that ultimate more relationship development that you were talking about. Yes, I also really liked it. Also, he's got a wife and kids. I just want to remind us of that.
Oh, right. Oh, ew, wait. Yeah.
But also,
I don't like that.
I know. But also what we learned in this episode, which I think we talked about last time, is she's not sure if her husband is dead. Like, she's not fully. No, no, I know. You said that. And she
thinks he's dead.
What? No, in this episode, she says something that made me write down in my notebook, oh, she's not 100% convinced that he's dead.
What did
someone
she say?
Says like, sorry for your loss. Ugh, I should have written it down exactly. I thought you would have caught it too, because you would have been like, see, I'm right. Damn it. Okay.
Oh, I mean, I think I did. Like, I remember sort of the scene you're talking about, because in my head, I just was like, yeah, 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 he's going to come back. And then I just like didn't really think about what exactly was said and what was meant by it.
Something about the way that she responded, or like maybe her face. She was like, he was very honorable. And then she like left something off. I felt like a dot, 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 as though she's not quite sure that he's gone, which made me be like, okay, yeah, they didn't show us his death. Like, Jess hit on a good thing there. Maybe I was reading too much into it. But I got from that scene with, what's her face? Played by Fumi, the woman who lost her husband. And
Fumi is the character's name. Is it Fuji or Fumi?
Fumi.
Fumi. Fumi? I feel like the captions kept saying Fuji.
Really? I just looked it up.
Or my brain who knows? Who knows? Yeah, I know a scene you're talking about, but either way, I think he's still alive, and I think I just like didn't.
Got it. Well, I think possibly so too now also.
Woohoo!
I agree.
I've converted you.
Yes.
I mean, I think he comes back. I don't really care about him though, because he seemed like, I don't know, I got bad vibes, so I don't really care that she's cheating on him.
Oh, I see. I was going to say, yeah, I don't think we're supposed to care about him, but I do think it's supposed to be like sort of I felt some ominous, oh no, if they do continue to be together and he does come back, there's some like clashing there that maybe is going to happen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Some foreboding.
That would be a good conflict, I think, that they'll probably be building to.
Yeah.
Switching gears.
Yep.
One thing that I do really like about this show is the depth of the historical references and like what I assume is historical accuracy, although I probably should look up what's being told to me before I just assume that. But the way that they're like, oh, like guns are already here. They've been here for 50 years. Like the Portuguese brought them to us, but like these cannons are new and you've never seen them before. Like those sorts of things, I feel like are not overly like history book way to like tell us what the time of life for these people was at this time, but like a very interesting, like normal way, not norm, what's the word I want? A very like subtle way to just be like, this is what life was like without being overly
preachy.
What's
about
the
it.
Word like, I want? Yeah, I'm not didactic. Preachy.
Yeah, didactic is a good one. I agree. I think they're continuing to build the world, because I think feudal Japan for a lot of people in the world is not something that is super well known. And so they're really good at, like, even this is slightly different from what you're talking about like when the guns arrived, et cetera. But the concept of, okay, you've just been made this like more honorable title, the Hatamoto, you have your own quarters. And then like everyone that arrives has their own quarters. I'm assuming the houses that they're getting, people were kicked out of. Like, there are just like subtle things about the life there where it seems like no one's safe. We have weapons. There's death all around us. Like all of the world building, including the historical stuff that you're talking about, but also just like the way that Japan must have been back then without a ton of technology, waiting for every tsunami and earthquake, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's painting a really good picture of the life these people are leading in a way that I'm really liking learning as I go along. It's not boring. It's not, I can't think of another word besides didactic or preachy, but come up with the word that is between those two. And it's not that. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of the word too. I think what's noteworthy in what we're both sort of saying, but if I think about it from a step back, is like, there are not a lot of shows set in this time period, at least not popular shows like in the US. And so whereas we get a lot of like World War II dramas, and also like we learn about that period of time in history classes, and we know like, okay, here's the tech they had at the time. Mm-hmm. It's more recent, easier to understand. Like, we don't get much set in this time period, in this place. And so these things that like we just can't take for granted like anything about that world, because we just don't really know it. And I like learning about it. It makes me wish we had more shows like set in this time period. I think it's like a fascinating time, and it's a fascinating culture, and the way that they're portraying like the politeness, but actually like everybody has their own stuff going on is very intriguing. And yeah, I don't know. We get a lot of like fantasy shows that are sort of similar in scope and in like political intrigue, but you know, you're not actually learning about a time period or a place when you're watching those, because they're fake.
I was just about to say like what you're describing and the way that they're gradually showing us this world has a very, it makes me go back to the parallel with Game of Thrones or other fantasy shows, because it is world building and it's fun to learn things about new worlds, except we have a shared vocabulary and some background knowledge. Like, you don't have to go from page one not knowing what anything is and building a world from scratch. It's building a world from pieces that we already understand, but it is still that exciting, like, oh, what is the quote unquote magic system here? Or like, what is the
magic system?
in feudal Japan, the magic system, I'm thinking like in my mind, is the politics of politeness. Like, what is everything? How do all those pieces work? And like, what does it mean when someone does this versus that? But yeah, I think that is fun. I wish maybe this will be like a jumping off point for more historical pieces that are a little bit more fantasy in the way that they world build. I would be into
it. I feel like that whole time period across the whole world is very unknown to me. Like, we learned about some of that stuff in, I don't know, like sixth grade, like the Ottoman Empire and like stuff like that. And it's like, I don't really know. Like, there aren't any really popular pieces of media currently, at least, or in, you know, recently, that have portrayed any of that, other than like, I don't know, there's like the Gladiators movies and like things like that, which probably aren't even the same time period. I don't I don't remember any of this from history class. I don't know, but I feel like there's good stuff in there that we should make more stuff like that.
Yeah, I think part of the issue for the two of us, at least, because I know that we took the same history classes, is that we did wind up in a European history class toward the end and not a world history class. And our only world history was like our own learnings.
Clearly it's been tough for me. I literally sixth grade was like the last time I learned world history. And then I just went like, when in normal everyday life are you learning about that stuff? You're just not.
Unless you've got a really good Wikipedia learning streak. I don't know, I guess.
No, I literally know more about Westeros than the Ottoman Empire, which most people probably do if I took a poll on the street.
Probably true. Yeah. Anyway, I agree. I really like the storytelling. I really like the production that is supporting this world building storytelling. It's great. Well done. I like the fact, sorry, this is a slight transition, but I like the pacing of this show so far. I like that this episode was a little bit slower. It took some beats. We got what's his face? Blackthorn just kind of like contemplating life in the rain as a different type of prisoner than he is now. And then by the end, we were like, oh shit, drama, it's war, stuff's going down. Like I just really well paced and good. It's not a twist, but it was a little bit of a twist, you know?
Yeah, just when you were like, oh, this episode was like more slow about the characters. Yeah. They were like, last 5 minutes, you thought.
Just kidding.
That was wild. I didn't expect it to go that way. I also really like the way they did that. There hasn't been a lot of – there was like some kind of intense violence in the first episode. They're like boiling people alive or whatever. But this was the first sort of like bloody action scene we got. And I think that has been a criticism of the show for some people, at least that I've seen, is like it's not – there's not enough action or not enough whatever. And I think it's pretty clear that they're building to that.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. Sure.
So for this to sort of like come out – in the 11th hour and be like super crazy bloody and gory, which normally I would have a problem with, I actually thought was just like really well done on like the tail end of this kind of slower episode. Mm-hmm. To put that in there is
the tag of entrails.
was just so the, I don't know if it's the dichotomy or the sort of like tonal switch that I just thought worked really well.
Yeah. Agree. Hard agree.
Also some cool backstabbing action. Although I did need to like pull up a character diagram.
Oh yeah, it's the sons. I feel like we haven't spent enough time with that with the generation removed from what I'm calling the Littlefinger guy.
That's how I refer to him in my head.
Yabushige is his name.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
He's working both sides in a way that feels very Littlefinger in nature. Sure. And then his son, who I thought was related to the son of Lord Toranaga, but they're not. I just
they're
got
not,
them confused.
Yeah, they're not related. They're just like friends.
Same generation.
Or whatever. Yeah. So Toranaga's son is Nagakama? Nagakama? He's in it so briefly, but then ends up being so important in the end. That's why I was like, wait, I needed to look it up. Remind me who this is, what's going on. Because then there's also Omi, who is, I thought it was Yabushige's nephew?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So then Omi and Nagakama end up being like the pivotal players at the end here. But I was a little thrown because at first I thought Yabushige was in on it. His performance of like, oh no, like, how dare you? Who sanctioned this? Like, I thought that was a bit and that he was in on it. And then I realized that he wasn't. So I don't know if like the acting wasn't working for me or if for some reason I just assumed he was in on it and that was just like my weird assumption. But so I think where they're going with it is like the sons end up being more important. But like you said, it did feel a little bit like, wait, who are these people again?
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely seen Toranaga's son. There were those earlier scenes of, it almost seems like he was being brushed off by his father. And maybe that is what like sort of helped incite him to be like, I'm going to show my dad that I'm like, I'm important and I have good political acumen and I know what to do here. And we now have we now have this bloodbath that has just happened and we know that Toranaga is returning soon. Which is an interesting, like I'm interested to see how that plays out. But yeah, I do sort of wonder if the two nephews are just going to be like, I mean, sorry, the son and the nephew will be gone by the next episode, even though they were pivotal in this one.
Yeah, I guess thinking about it, they could have just been sort of like side characters that don't end up being important. But I liked this arc for them.
I did too. Can I just say, though, I understand. I really like Lord Toranaga. I was bummed when he dipped 30 seconds into this episode. when they like arrived with big fanfare. And then he was like, I've got important business. Just kidding. Goodbye. That was one, kind of a baller move. But two, I was like, oh no, I was excited to see more of the Blackthorn Torunaga, like that bromance kind of, I don't know, develop a little bit more. And then he dipped. But he, that actor remains, even though he was only in this episode for a full like minute, so good.
Well, like, he's, I feel like he's
tying everything together so well.
I think Yabushige is my favorite actor, the guy who plays him. His facial expressions are just so animated. I love it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I love it as like the guy who's playing both sides and like definitely not keeping things close enough to the vest.
Yeah.
Like he's just, everything's written all over his face. I think that that's working really well. I also really like the guy who's playing Blackthorn, Cosmo Jarvis. Which is such a fun name.
It is a fun name.
I don't know if that's his real name or not, but Cosmo?
Cosmo.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone besides like the Wanda. Fairly Odd Parents. Yeah, exactly. But he is the comic relief in this show, and it's – I feel like it could so easily be an eye roll, but it never is. Like it's always – it always makes me chuckle a little. Like what does he say in this one? It says like punk – pig ass. I don't know. He's always like insulting people, and then Mariko's there, like
he honorably requests your. Yeah. Yeah.
He politely declines or whatever.
Right.
And I think that that's working really well.
I like their dynamic. I will say he is the one part that sometimes makes me be like, like I know you were like without it could easily be an eye roll, and it's not an eye roll for me. And I think it's just maybe that I can't not laugh at the way that he delivers every line, like he's like barking orders at someone, and maybe that's just his voice. I don't know, but he's like when I was a boy, like I can't think of
he anything. He does have a kind of like funny voice. I know what you're saying. Oh, he says, I looked it up because I was like, what was that insult? This milk dribbling. F smear. He says the word. I just, and so that you don't have to beep it out, I'll just
appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah. But that made me laugh.
Milk dribbling. Gross.
It's just the like other... so out of pocket and like, but like so crippling. The insults I love.
The other thing that I liked, the other dynamic between Blackthorn and another character is that I really liked that we got more of Fumi this episode and her. Like bond growing with Blackthorn, some mutual respect. She was a like badass in this episode. For what reason? I don't quite know. Is it just because she trusts? Is it just because she trusts Mariko and like has nothing to lose that she was just like, yeah, okay, I'll defend this English dude? Or it's because like she signed on to be his courtesan, so she has to act with this honor. Whatever it was, the fact that she just like pulled the gun on, I can't remember who it was that was asking for them, either the nephew or the son, was a good scene. She has my respect, and like I don't know, I'm glad that we're learning more about her and her personality.
Yeah, the actress who plays Fuji also, and I did look it up, it is Fuji.
Are you sure?
Incredible. I just looked it up because I really felt like it was Fuji. She's
I'm looking at too.
Giving one of the most nuanced performances in this show. So I just had a fun time watching her facial expressions. And there is this sort of intrigue of like, yeah, whose side is she on? Why is she this way? What?
Fumi is the name of an actress in
That's
this
what I
show.
Thought, but then I wasn't sure because you said it earlier and I was like, I don't, yeah. Who does?
But you're right. The person I'm talking about is Fuji. That is completely my mistake. I apologize. All right, sorry, go on.
I accept your apology. I just think that actress is really good. That's the whole thing. Because I think there is sort of like a confusion to what's going on with her character, but she's playing it in a way that it feels very intentional. And so I'm like, oh, we're going to figure her out at some point. It doesn't just feel like the writers don't know what they're doing with her. It's just we're getting little pieces of character development as we go. And I think that that can be really frustrating, especially with the waiting. Ugh, I don't like waiting a week for a week. Each episode. And I think that's partially just my own problem because I'm watching too many things at once. But I also think that this show is a great, like, this would be Game of Thrones if this were, like, on a Sunday night, on on Sunday night. Everybody talks about it the next day. Like it, but it doesn't have that around it. Like, I don't really know that many people watching it. There's nobody to talk to about it besides you. So the waiting each week just feels like anticlimactic in some sense. I have to like get myself back into it. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I do like this show. But now like I just finished this one and I'm like, oh, I got to wait a whole week to figure out what happens next. And I don't know. There's not enough like momentum carrying me. That's a bummer for me, I will say. I think it's taking away from my enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I will be honest. I don't know what day this comes out because I always wind up watching it on a Friday. I think Tuesdays. It's Wednesday maybe. Tuesdays, okay.
Yeah, so when this podcast comes out, the fifth episode will already be out.
Yeah, so not too much to wait for us at least after discussing this one until we see the next one. Although I probably
will. Yeah, but if I watch it on Tuesdays and then we talk about it on the next Monday, I can't possibly remember anything.
Well, maybe we'll move up.
I watched this this morning. I watched this at 7 a.m. this morning. That's the other thing is like if it were a Sunday night, like 8 p.m. watch and like Matt and I were both watching it and we could sit down and the lights would be off and I could actually see the dim scenes because that one scene was so dim. I was like, was that Mariko? Was that a Quirtesan? I had to go back, lower my blinds. I'm looking at like her profile, like comparing her profile to the other scenes. It would be so different. And that's my own fault. Like I could watch it at night, but I like watching things with people in the evenings.
Are you not watching this with Matt? I guess
no,
that's an
obvious.
No, he's
not watching it. I think he'd like it. A lot of shows I just start on my own and then I've already started them. And so we just continue that way. But I do feel like this one was a miss. We would both like watching this together, I think.
Well, he's got time to catch up.
Are you guys?
As you said. Yeah, we're watching it together.
Yeah. That's probably the better way to do it.
Yeah. It's fun. It's nice. I would recommend. Maybe we can just convince people with this podcast, more people to watch, and then we will have more people to talk about it with, and then we'll have that feeling of it's exciting and we will be interested in
it. Yeah. Do you know anyone else watching it? I know like one other person watching it.
No, I think I've been telling my parents to watch it. I think they would like it. But they don't have Hulu. And I was like, you could definitely watch using it. Yeah.
It's like the main, one of the two. I feel like everyone has Netflix and Hulu.
That's true. And like, I feel like more of our generation, like students always get it with their, I don't know, Apple products. I'm saying stuff, but I don't know if that's true. But Disney Plus, Hulu, that combo. Anyway, no, I don't know very many people who are watching it. I've been telling people to. And a lot of them are like,
It's a dad show for sure, but neither of our dads are watching it.
No. Yeah. How come your dad's not? He has got Hulu, I bet, on your reaction.
I feel like this show has his name written all over it. I told him to watch it. He said he's not sure. Waiting for my review.
Okay. But your review is positive.
Yeah. To be fair, you reviewed the first two episodes. I had not said anything. But then, that does make a difference. He doesn't always agree with your reviews. But I did say I was liking it. So I don't know if they started. But I think that's all my thoughts on episode 4.
Same. Except I just wanted to mention one more scene, which was a character development and just like a cutie. Didn't need to be there, but I like that it was in there. The scene where Blackthorn insists that he gets to eat what the other two are eating, that fermented soybean dish. I just like those.
The way
he
was describing
touches.
That was making my stomach feel unwell.
Right. I didn't like that. I didn't like that aspect. But I do like that they leave room in this show for scenes like that. And it doesn't feel like it's a drag and it doesn't feel out of place. It just feels like more development and more like a window into these people. And like little smiles that the two ladies share while he's trying this fermented soybean stuff. Anyway, that was my last note.
The series feels unafraid of being accused of having filler, which I feel like is such a thing in the binge model streaming world right now, is that like you get an 8-episode show and it's just go, 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 go. And there's like not enough character development. There's not enough just like people, being characters. It doesn't feel lived in because people are so like afraid of filler. They're so critical of it, which is so dumb because TV needs that.
Depends,
not
but yes,
literal
I agree.
Filler. But I'm talking about what people accuse of being filler is often like actual, like character development. Sure. People accused episode 3 of The Last of Us of being filler. Like, get the. I can't. So like this kind of a thing, I feel like people would be like, "Oh, nothing happened in this episode," because there's like no action till the end, And I am happy that the show has not succumbed to that pressure.
Totally.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, I would say Avatar, the live action, would very much succumb to that pressure. They have zero episodes or zero moments of just like characters being characters.
Kids being kids, which is what they needed.
Literally.
I have comments that I'll wait till next episode to talk about, but I'm going to mention it in this one so that I don't forget, and I'll write it down also. I want to talk about how proficient at Portuguese these two non-native speakers at Portuguese seem to be with one another, because it is nutso that they're just like saying these beautiful turns of phrases in Portuguese. True. And I keep having to remind myself they're not speaking English and it's not either of their native languages. And it's, I think we're supposed to forget that, but it is every once in a while it comes back and I'm like, there's no moment where he's like, what's that word mean? And then she says it in Portuguese / English, because that's what we're listening in. And he doesn't ever have to consult a dictionary or ask her to explain it a different way. It's just like,
it's a suspend your disbelief thing. And I know sometimes you have a hard time with that, but I think in this case, we're just supposed to go with it.
It's not taking away my enjoyment of the show, which I feel like that is when sometimes suspense of disbelief does like truly take me out, and it is just more of a thing that I'm noticing and makes me chuckle and be like,
yeah, they knew they couldn't put the whole thing in subtitles. People don't like that.
Sure. Yeah. And I bet it would be even more jarring if they're both speaking English, that what seems to be Blackthorne's native tongue, and he was like, what does that mean? Like, if they were doing it as though it were in a different, I know that would be weird. I'm aware. It's just every once in a while when I remember that they're supposed to be speaking Portuguese, I'm like, these prodigies, like, dang. That's all. Looking forward to the next episode. Looking forward to discussing with you and listeners out there. If you're watching this, let us know, because we would love to talk about it with more people. If you like what you heard, you know, follow, leave a review, 5 stars if you're feeling up to it. And you can also find more of our reviews in written form on our Substack newsletter, doubletake.substack.com. That's dbltake.substack.com. It's also in the show notes, so if I fumbled that too much, you can go there and check it out. Thanks for listening.
Find links to follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter in the show notes of this episode. Thank you for listening to Double Take. If you like what you heard, please support us by subscribing and leaving a review. See you next time. The Double Take podcast is produced by Jess Ball and me, Jennifer Cullen.